θα φταίλε, φίλε. Θα φταίλε του, αλλά είναι Ιάσο. Θα φταίλε αυνόα. Θα φταίλε νουεστέ, μα σου γαλιά, φίλε. Ευσο σου ανιφό, μα για ούμολ είναι Ιάσο. Θα φταίλε μάλου, μάλου, πα ίω Σαμόα, ου φα τα σημάει. Greetings, kia ora. Greetings from Samoa. Thank you for the opportunity, Philip, to come and present here at this conference about rheumatic fever, rheumatic heart disease. And hopefully by the end of this talk that everybody here will take something home. And it was a challenge to produce this talk for all levels of society. And I'm sorry that this was produced on the Mac. We have Macs in Samoa. And now it's translated into PC, and we'll see how we go. Does it work? Okay. I'm from that country called Samoa, and usually called Paradise. And if you haven't visited, you're missing your experience. Don't visit Fiji or Tonga, just visit Samoa. In case, can you get this to work? In case you don't know where Samoa is, it's right here. Okay. 3 hours or 4 hours from New Zealand, 6 hours from Australia. This is Pacific. By the way, I think New Zealand and Australia are Pacific too. That's true. Samoa is a small country, and it's a landmass of 3,000 kilometers squared, two main islands. I was born in the village called Satu Baitea, and somewhere around this region here. And the population is pretty stable. It's 187,000 recently. It's 1% annual growth. Most of our income are from tourism and also from us sending people for you to play in the All Blacks and also to play for the Wallabies. And so they sent money home. And expatriation brings in about 300, 400 million a year. So it's serious money. So we provide you with the All Blacks. You provide us with money. We provide the Australians are not doing too good because they got one or two Samoans in the team. Maybe the rugby leagues are doing good because they got quite a few. But it's a pretty young population. And 51% of males, life expectancy is not as good as New Zealand, but it's getting better than 20 years ago. And that's the sort of demographic. I'm based in Samoa, and for the last 14 years I've gone back. It's called Baptism of Fire. But unfortunately, not a lot of us who train in New Zealand end up back in Samoa for various reasons. But I've decided to take that road and gone back. And I'm now, in the last 5 years, 3 days in private practice, mainly cardiology and some general medicine, and 2 days in public. And the public duties I do is rheumatic fever, rheumatic heart disease, cardiology clinic for 1 day, and then I do diabetes for another day. Previous before that, about 8 or 9 years before that, I used to run the hemodialysis unit, the transplant program in Samoa, because we do have transplant in Samoa, and I used to run the endoscopy suite. So it's a jack of all trades and feel like you're master of none. But it's one of those things you're pushing to the water. You got to swim, you got to swim. And when I was in Auckland doing advanced training, I spent many years doing advanced training in many fields because I know I was going back. So currently now, I do 6 to 8 months of clinical work, full-time, 5 days a week, and there are 4 months of teaching, research, and dabble in politics, dabble. Academia, I've been in Oceania University of Medicine. I teach for the Fiji School of Medicine at the moment, the Master of Medicine, and Auckland University, and honorary fellow here. I also am on the council for the National University, which is of Samoa, which is a new position. Research, I've been doing quite a lot of non-communicable disease. In 2002, STEP survey, and looking at diabetes, hypertension, all the risk factors, and then another one just recently completed. I'm involved in World Heart Federation ECHO Criteria Research Writing Group, which is about 21 of us from all around the world. And I'm doing that at the moment, research in RHD screening research, SALT research, and athlete's heart disease. Because as you know, Peter Fatilofa recently died yesterday, and we know that rugby players and sports players suffer from heart disease, whether sports has contributed or whether they were born with it, don't know. The burden of rheumatic heart disease. Funny enough, this year, on the 29th of September 2010, the focus of World Heart Day was on rheumatic heart disease. Focus is returning to a neglected, entirely preventable heart disease, preventable, and largely affects the world's youngest and poorest population. That's generally. Before I go on, I ask the question, what is acute rheumatic fever for those who don't know, and what is rheumatic heart disease? It is a multi-system, loss of system involved in the body, autoimmune, it attacks itself, followed an infection called group A strep in the throat. Okay, so it's a multi-system, autoimmune disease, attacks itself, we attack ourselves, because there's an infection called Streptococcus A. There are diagnostic criteria called major manifestation, and the most feared one is heart disease, carditis. It can also affect the joints, swollen joints, or sore joints. It can affect the brain and chorea. It's called chorea. It's a funny movement of the hand. Hopefully, I can show you the video I took of a kid with a chorea, and it's a funny movement of the hand. Unfortunately, some of our society think that that's demon possession, but it's actually chorea. You treat them and it get better. And erythema marginatum is a rash. It's like a 10-cent coin or 20-cent coin all around the body. And finally, subcutaneous nodules is nodules underneath the skin. So some of these are included in the diagnostic criteria. This is very important because in places around the world, polyarthritis, multiple swollen joints, maybe multiple sore joints rather than swollen joints. Rheumatic heart disease is a chronic damage to the heart valves that follows acute rheumatic fever. And we see a lot of this in the Pacific, because when it gets very severe, it kills a lot of our kids, even here in New Zealand. We spend a lot of money fixing this. You spend a lot of money fixing rheumatic heart disease. Lots of money. To discuss rheumatic fever, one has to look at pathogenesis, what are the cause, how common, the clinical features, patient implication, and public health implication. You know, as I go along in my clinical career, the more patients you see, the more you think, I got to stop the dam somewhere up here. And the only way to stop it is stop it further up. Because if you stop it further up, you won't see so many people in front of you. That's clinical public health. Pathogenesis is an autoimmune disease. Autoimmune self, immune disease, is an immunity against yourself, follows an infection, and there are many unanswered questions. But I will tell you the recent theories. Sorry, that doesn't come out very well, but this is a very bad throat, swollen tonsil, scarred, a drip, and this is a pretty bad-looking throat infection. That is most likely group A strep. It starts with a germ like this, and it hits you, causes the infection. So you mount an infection towards this organism, because most of us, or lots of us, about 20%, the germ sits there happily, carriage, between 10 and 20%. So in some of you, you're having this infection at the moment. But it's not naughty, it's just sitting there. But when it becomes naughty, then you react to it, okay? And when it becomes naughty, it causes infection, it causes all sorts of markers in the blood to go up. You mount an immune response to it. The immune response is you create bullets, you know, create darts towards infection, and you shoot it. Those darts or bullets against that infection affect your heart as well, affect your skin, affect your brain. That's where the autoimmunity comes in. It's the similar immune response that you produce against the infection will also make your joints swollen, will also attack the valves of your heart. And hence we have the first episode of acute rheumatic fever. And with more recurrent rheumatic fever, we think you will get more and more rheumatic heart disease. The question is, why is there an abnormal immune response? What's different between you and I, you who live here and I in Samoa? Why do you react differently to my reaction? Why do Maori people react differently to European people? Those are some of the unanswered questions. Of course, our answer is we're different because we're genetically different. We've been trying to look for the gene for some years. We haven't found it yet. Good luck. I've been looking for a gene for several things, including diabetes. Good luck. I haven't found it yet. Maybe it's in the brown gene. Why is there an abnormal immune response and what happens? Those are the germs. There's a little thing called an M protein in the cell wall. And that's the M protein that we use to identify the germ. And there's a variety of M type streptococcal group A. Now these factors are used by the germ to invade the organism. Now some of you medical students, I put this up specifically for you. Streptolysin O, you produce an antibody against it and you measure the antibody, called ASOT. Hyaluronidase, you can measure the antibody against. You can measure the antibody against DNAs. So that's where the basis of the blood test that you see in rheumatic fever comes from. What does that look like? This thing here, it's helical structure like this, and that's from the cell wall. That unfortunately is very similar to some of the tissues inside your heart and inside some parts of your body. So when you mount a reaction against that, you are mounting a reaction against your own cells. Is it antibody mediated? Definitely. Is it cellular mediated? There's also evidence it's cellular mediated as well. And if you look at the slides of the heart, there's a lot of inflammatory cells attacking the elastic tissue, not so much the myocytes. Because if you do the markers of damage of myocytes of the cardiac muscle, it's normal. Troponins are normal. But they're stretching of the connected tissue connecting the cells. And so we get an enlargement of the heart. Is it pharyngitis? Is it a sore throat only? Because strip A is not only in the throat, but elsewhere, in the skin and other parts of the body. Is it just pharyngitis? What about skin sores? Pharyngitis gives you acute rheumatic fever. Pharyngitis group A strep can give you glomerular nephritis of the kidney, the infection of the kidney. So it's again an autoimmune acute post-strep glomerulonephritis. And in Auckland, that is common. You get from skin sores or from throat sores. Bioderma skin sore can give you glomerulonephritis. What about the other way around? The skin sores causing acute rheumatic fever. Because it is an autoimmune process. It's not an actual infection, but your reaction against the germ gives you these reactions. The glomerulonephritis, kidney infection, and the acute rheumatic fever. Suggested evidence is that in some areas where there's high rates of acute rheumatic fever and rheumatic heart disease, there is low group A strep, throat carriage, low rates of pharyngitis, but a high rate of skin sores. And that's what we've seen in Fiji and in some of the countries. Is there something special about the host, you and me? Why are you different than me? But look at me and look at you. We are different. And that's probably the reason why we react differently. But given the social economic factors that you and I get exposed to, will shape your reaction and my reaction. In other words, if I'm protein malnourished, I won't have the same reaction to you. Okay? So those factors are extremely important in the immune response of the person. These are the factors that's very, very, very sexy in New Zealand, these ones. Please don't blame the government for all of this, because I just got interviewed and the interviewer seemed to be focusing on poverty. But these are part of the equation. You cannot attack rheumatic fever in wholesome without addressing these issues, and these issues are extremely important. Socioeconomic status, poverty, overcrowding, urbanization, nutrition, and access to medical services. So if you're going to eradicate rheumatic fever from here, you have to address this. Complication on RHD. The valves, I'm sorry, this don't come out very well, that affect it are mainly the mitral valve right here, aortic valve here, the tricuspid valve, and the pulmonary valve. These two are rarely affected. But most of the time we see the mitral valve getting affected, and less so with the aortic valve. And this is what I see all the time when I'm doing echocardiograms. Complications, which we see all the time, and I'm sure if you work in Auckland, you see it all the time. People present, kids present with congestive heart failure, infection in the heart, infection endocarditis, irregular heartbeat, atrial fibrillation, and strokes. And I've seen a kid of 5 or 6 years old having a stroke, and it's got significant rheumatic heart disease. There's a lag time between the presentation of acute rheumatic RSD and congestive heart failure, especially with significant leak in the mitral valve. You could see somebody with moderate leak of the mitral valve, no symptoms. They're running around. It's only when they reach quite severe mitral regurgitation or leak of the mitral valve that the kid looks tired, maybe breathless. And that's what parents said. We thought they're tired. Okay. Infection of the valves of the heart. 60% of cases of infective endocarditis are in patients with pre-existing rheumatic heart disease, and mortality is 25%. So it's a significant problem. What about atrial fibrillation? It's common with mitral stenosis. Atrial fibrillation is irregular heartbeat. And if the mitral valve is narrowed, then it's most likely that your rhythm will go out of rhythm. And sometimes they complain of palpitations. Sometimes they present with a stroke. Related to atrial fibrillation and dilatation on one of the chambers of the heart called the left atrium, and it's between 3 and 7.5% of strokes are due to rheumatic heart disease. So it's a significant cause of it. The question has been asked, is this an NCD or a CD? Is it non-communicable disease or communicable disease? What do people think? Definitely, when that infection hops on your throat, because an infection, it's communicable disease, right? Because you can cough it and communicate it. But when it's reached rheumatic heart disease, that you will never transmit. Same as rheumatic fever, you will never transmit to the other person. So there is a great argument, which I think is unfortunate, reason why rheumatic fever, rheumatic heart disease falls in between the cracks, because there's a lot of money for NCD, hypertension, diabetes, etc. There's a lot of money for CD, HIV, tuberculosis, but the rheumatic fever sits somewhere in the middle. And there's hardly any mention. Until last year at the UN convention I went to in New York, they start addressing rheumatic fever and rheumatic heart disease under NCD, because then they can put some money into it. And they say, I can apply for that money. What are some of the examples of NCDs with infective stimuli? Liver cancer, hepatitis B and C. Starts with an infection, you end up with a cancer. Same as cervical cancer, same as cancer of the stomach from an infection called Helicobacter pylori. So these are some of the examples of infection leading to NCD. Diagnosis in rheumatic fever really relies on the germ, what the germ looks like, the pathogenicity, what it behaves like, because it behaves in you differently than me, what you're like, and the environment that you expose to. And you've got to address all the three of them for a comprehensive eradication program. Unfortunately, too, that strep A, 3% of Streptococcus A throat infection leads to rheumatic fever, not 100%. And if you have throat infection, you got rheumatic fever, 30% with the first attack rheumatic fever have their heart affected. And the more recurrent attack, the more likelihood that you get the heart being affected. The other problem with the diagnosis is that the Jones criteria, which we love to use in diagnosing, varies in different countries. In Samoa, I see a lot of kids with sore joints and they got rip-roaring heart disease. In other parts of the world, you see kids with swollen joints, arthritis versus arthralgia. Jones criteria developed by and changed by the Americans when they didn't see much of sore joints anymore. But the rest of the world was seeing sore joints and they thought, well, make it more specific, we'll use the swollen joint. What we're seeing in Samoa is a lot of asymptomatic rheumatic fever, if you ever call it rheumatic fever. I.e., yeah, I remember having a little bit of sore joint and that's it. One day, gone. Phew. And forget about it. That was the beginning of all. Lots of rheumatic heart disease without rheumatic fever symptoms. At the moment, we're relying on the rheumatic fever symptoms to bring people forward so that we can diagnose rheumatic heart disease. And lots present with undiagnosed rheumatic heart disease with symptoms of heart failure in hospital, stroke, and atrial fibrillation. What about the burden of disease? Now, this is not from the global burden. This is actual figures, okay? I take your point. It's beautiful. This is not from those models. This is actual things on the ground. Federal stage of myoclonia. These are the hospital data. 10.425. Hawaii. You notice that Samoans have 206 per 100,000. Maybe we Samoans migrate with our predisposition. I don't know. But these are Samoans who were born in Hawaii. Here. Okay. French Polynesia, 72 per 100,000. New Caledonia and New Zealand down here, unfortunately, it's been cut off, this one here. And that's from the 1980s. I will show you some recent data. Okay, these are all from hospital register databases. What about rheumatic heart disease? These are mainly auscultation using the stethoscope. This is using echo. In Samoa, we had a register at the time. We still got the register now. We did a school survey with Andrew Steers and the team, but this is mainly with the stethoscope, no echo. And it's quite variable. We did a school survey. I did a school survey back in 2001 of about 2,500 kids, and it's about 3 per 1,000. And this is a survey whereby you go out to the schools, you listen to the stethoscope, then bring the people forward with positive murmurs or heart disease to be echoed. New Zealand, 1 and 7.6. Register base. What about Tonga? This is from hospital cases in Tonga. 15 to 24, 13 per 100,000. Is that a problem in Tonga? Yeah. What about RHD? These are all auscultation surveys, but in 2004, they decided to use the echo machine. And this is 33 per 1,000. So for every 1,000 kids, remember there's about 60,000 kids in Tonga, you'll find 33 heart disease. Problem? Lots of it. And in Tonga, they did the survey in 2004, and Kim will recognize some of these individuals, Jonathan Karapetis, Dan Penny, and Andrew Steers, whereby they screened 5,000 kids, which is 36% of the Tongan primary school population. And this is what they went through. Doctors auscultate, they find a murmur, then the pediatrician is taught, auscultate, confirm, then they go through the echo. And that's what they've done. And this is the result, 33.2 per 1,000. And these are all definite on echo. What about Fiji? This is data from Fiji. These are all hospital-based diagnosis of acute rheumatic fever. So you see 49, 15, and 6. And in RHD, this is what they recorded in the register. So 1.8 per 1,000, 0.7, 17 per 1,000. And I will show some recent data from Fiji. And they did the survey about 2010, and this is what they come up with. They used a very similar methodology to Tonga. They screened 2,854 school children. This is what they come up with. So for every 1,000 kids you screen, you come up with 10. Still a lot. Should be zero, huh? What about our neighbors? Australia is the highest in the world. And mainly that data came from the Northern Territories, from Jonathan Karapetis' work. 250 to 350 per 100,000. Is it a problem in Australia? Yeah. Small problem, isn't it? A huge problem. Same as RHD in Australia. What about New Zealand? This is the quoted figures, 15 per 100,000. Acute rheumatic fever. If you break it down, these are the differences. 31.9 in Māori, Pacific, 64, 1.7. Why? RHD, they've just started screening back in 2008. This is Nigel Wilson's team's work. And in South Auckland, 24 per thousand. In Tairawiti, recently they published a paper, 11 per thousand. And about 40% of those adults picked up there were asymptomatic, had no symptoms of rheumatic fever. And Bay of Plenty, look at North Shore. None. White, affluent community. Yep. Okay. Porirua, not too bad. That's South Auckland. And this was done last year. 13 per thousand. What about Paradise? Okay. The incidence of acute rheumatic fever is 30 per 100,000. It's higher than you guys. Same as RSD incidence from the register. So we've now done the survey. We haven't completed it yet. I started doing it from 2008 to 2013. So by the end of this year, we'll complete. And we've done so far, I'm going to show you about 8,200 kids that I've screened on Echo. But I've done another 3 or 4,000 so far. So at higher than New Zealand, caused a lot of deaths in Samoa. Lots of deaths. And it's preventable deaths. And it costs the government a lot of money because the government pay for the surgeries in New Zealand. And one surgery, guess how much it costs? 70,000 New Zealand dollars for one valve surgery. And if it's complicated, it goes up to 100,000 for one surgery. And if you send 30, that's 3 million a year, which is a lot of money, which in our dollars is almost 5 million tala, which is half of overseas treatment budget that we send people overseas. And that's just purely rheumatic heart disease. That's why I'm so excited about it, because you can actually turn around in your lifetime. Diabetes may not be, hypertension, you probably won't turn around in your lifetime, but rheumatic heart disease, yes, you can turn around in 10 to 20 years. We have a database of 1,144. We now got 1,000, almost 1,300 by the end of last year. And this are the people we follow regularly throughout the year. And as you notice, acute rheumatic fever seemed to drop and then goes up again. But RHD has gone up because of the screening program. So it's not an increase of disease, but it's an increase of picking up. What about surgery? This is what we've been sending to New Zealand. The numbers, these are numbers, these are years. And in 2009, we sent about 80 people for overseas treatment paid by government. Almost 30 of those are rheumatic heart disease. So we sent between 20 and 30 a year, 70,000 pop. Now the reason why there's an increase of this graph is because of ischemic heart disease. And we're sending as young as 20s, 24, 25 for bypass operations. And I'm sending most of those because they die from heart attacks as young as 30. So ischemic heart disease, rheumatic heart disease. Now, since doing the screening, we found that most of the RSD are asymptomatic, which is quite disturbing. You wonder how many people are sitting out there with rheumatic heart disease. And many patients are presenting with symptoms. We also know that if you use a stethoscope, it's less sensitive. The best of us will miss about 30% of all the murmurs. Most of us will miss about 50%. So the stethoscope that's used to listen to the heart, some of us won't pick it up. So echo is very sensitive. It picks up 10 times the cases, which is the rationale behind us doing the screening program since 2008. Three pillars of rheumatic fever knowledge. Without group A strep, there would be no rheumatic fever. So you can pray this germ out. We won't have rheumatic fever anymore. Recurrence of acute rheumatic fever can be prevented by continuous administration of pentothene penicillin. That's dogma. Severe RHD shortens life. And not as one. Okay. Severe RHD without penicillin, 20-year mortality, 30 to 80% dying at age 30, before age 30. And this is observational study from the States. It's published in 1951. The mean age of death of RHD is less than 25 in Nigeria, Ethiopia, and India. That's been published. Untreated RSV in childhood, 44 to 80% of kids untreated for rheumatic heart disease, rheumatic fever, progress to cardiac failure requiring medical or surgical treatment. And it's purely observational. We can't observe anymore nowadays because it's almost unethical not to put them on treatment. And acute rheumatic fever recurrence leads to progressive worsening of RSV, hence you need the pensethine penicillin. What about the natural history of RSV with good secondary prophylaxis? If you don't have heart disease or mild to moderate heart disease, very good prognosis. No detectable heart disease after 10 years. And that's with penicillin. So is there a treatment for it? Definitely. Very effective? Definitely. But with severe RSV, poor prognosis regardless of penicillin. I've seen some turn around with penicillin. Because when the valves are too damaged and the heart muscles start to fail, it's very difficult to turn around without operation. What about screening? Well, there's a new tool around the block. This is about the only thing very new in rheumatic fever at the moment. There's a lot of questions with it. You carry a portable echo like that, and that one of those can cost up to 150,000 New Zealand. This one here. And we got a group, international standardization echocardiographic diagnosis of RHD. There's 21 of us involved from around the world trying to set standards on how you diagnose RHD using the echo machine, using the ultrasound machine. And we've got together from around the world. These are all the parts of the world. And you're given about 500 echoes to report online. And then we have a teleconference. Everybody argues about it, the length of the leak, the valve thickness, etc. And then we get another 500 echoes to report, and then we have another teleconference and argue over it, the evidence, etc. We've been going for the last 3 to 4 years. And at the end of it, we published that paper last year. And now it's called the World Heart Federation Criteria for Echocardiographic Diagnosis of RHD. And that's a group of us from Fiji, Joe, from Australia, from India, from the United States, from France, from the African nations, South Africa, etc. So this is now the standard paper that everybody uses for standardization of what you see in the echocardiogram. What's the main difference? Well, the valve changes on the morphological changes of the valves, thickened valves, the valves are not moving very well, and there's significant leak or stenosis. Before, people didn't bother about the changes in the valves. The borderline is either the normal valve with significant leak or a significant leak with normal valve. What does that mean? We don't know. But we are now following up people over the last 2 years to find out what does it mean and what you do about it. For the people with definite RSD, the question at the moment is this the same as RSD following rheumatic fever? Or is it a different disease altogether? Unfortunately, we don't have time to observe that. We don't have time to observe that because it's almost unethical not to put them on penicillin. In 2007, we did screening with a stethoscope. And in 2008 to 2012, we screened with the echocardiogram and still doing for another few more months. And this, what I do is the first echo, you auscultate. Then you do the echo and they pick up the abnormals. Then you bring the parents in with the kid on the second echo to see them and re-scan them for detailed echo. And at the moment, since I started, I could echo 50 a day, and now I could echo 200 a day because it perfected technique. And the management put them on penicillin. We have looked at 35 schools in town and in the peripheries. We looked at Apia, around here, about 5,000 kids. Alipata, the region here, 1,620. And the northwest, 724. And Salulonga Savai, 708. So it's a total of 8,200 kids. And that's the breakdown of it. 500 kids in the age group of 5. Consists of 11% of the total population. The total sample is 19.2, so it's a pretty big sample. What did we find? We found that 352 kids from that had an abnormal echo, and they came forward for a second echo. And then we found 116 kids having definite rheumatic heart disease. Those kids could have progressed if we haven't picked them up. The crude prevalence is that, and the age standardized prevalence is 1.43%, which is about 14 per thousand. Previously, with the auscultation research, we thought it's a lot higher, 77 per thousand. The borderline is 44 kids. So out of every 1,000, we found 14 kids. What about by age group? If you come down from preschool down to the end of primary school, which is year 8, there's a higher percentage of RHD at age 12 and age 13. And this throughout the whole country. And so in the future, the screening program should attack the 2 years here, or maybe just before. And that's where the country is heading. It's towards a national screening program. You have a dental visit and you have an echo visit. And in that way, don't miss a lot of heart disease. What about comparison between those parts of the country, Apiale, Batan of West Savai? It's interesting where the tsunami was, slightly lower. Alipata, where the tsunami was. What about urban versus rural? Well, as we expected, the rural slightly higher. What about public school versus private school? This is private school versus public school in all the regions because some of the private schools are in the villages. Private school versus public school in Apia, the private school is lower. Now, the private school sometimes costs up to 4,000 or 5,000 tala per year for school fees. The public school is 200 tala for the school fees. That's a disparity of income. So there is something about income in the private school versus public school. The results, 96% of those kids were picked up had no symptoms because we asked them for symptoms. The most common lesion is the leak in the mitral valve. And these are severities. So 50%, mild, maybe you get away with it, you observe. About 40% in moderate, but with penicillin, in 10 years' time, these will disappear. Maybe this won't disappear, but at least we may make it better with penicillin. And we have sent 4 kids from the island of Savai to be operated on. These kids would have died without the screening program. Conclusion. RSD is still very common. The prevalence higher in Savai. And we may need to look at, and we're discussing with government, whether we should do a national screening program at the end of primary school life. You cannot run a screening program without making sure that your intramuscular penicillin prophylaxis is okay. Ours is not too bad. It's better than New Zealand. So about 79%, 84%, and 81% compliance. There's 13 injections a year, and you count how many kids have 13 injections, etc., etc., etc. Because the country is small, transport's accessible, the hospital accessible, reason why there's a higher prevalence of good compliance. In New Zealand's not the case, especially in North Island. Some regions, 50%, because of the distance they travel and the transport. Yeah, that doesn't look good. Anyway, these are some of the recent data of echo screening in Fiji, in Tuvalu 45.5, New Caledonia, Nauru, Kiribati, and Solomons. So it's a huge burden. What can we do about it? Because this is an easy, preventable disease. We improve the pickup, we improve the diagnostic, we improve the screening for heart disease, then we sort out the social economic status and all the other socioeconomic factors that go along with it. We cannot leave that alone and try to concentrate on the germ and the treatment. We've got to do it all together. The socioeconomic factors, the germ, and then the treatment, and all the follow-up that's necessary. So hopefully in Samoa, in another few years, but we do a lot of screening, that lots of people have picked up. One of the good things about screening for heart disease is that people become aware because they fear death. Once they know the screening is coming to the school, whack, they all come in because they don't want their kids to have heart disease, which is the reason why there's a high success rate in school. I go to a school of about 600, probably 90% will turn up, or 95% of kids will turn up to those schools because the parents will force the kids to come in. So those are all the necessary ingredients. Our job and my job is to make sure the hospital-based follow-up and the clinical follow-up improves. The politician's role is to make sure that all the inequality issues need to be addressed, because penicillin is very, very cheap. Thank you.